Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, April 15th. I'm Maya Trimble.
Carmen Hostler.
I'm Levi Miner.
I'm Julian Serber.
I'm Willa Moon.
Alina Daniel.
We are the Hoopa High School Youth News Team.
Reporting for KIDE and KMUD. In tonight's news, advocates fear sale of public lands, layoffs and cutbacks that could overwhelm California state parks. California Congress member Robert Garcia blasts Republican move to slash Medicaid by $88 billion. And Mendocino Farm Bureaus ask Trump to block dam removal, preventing return of Eel River water rights to Round Valley Tribe. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up.
In-state news. Advocates fear sale of public lands, layoffs, and cutbacks that could overwhelm California state parks. Vic Bedoyan shares this report.
California Natural Resources Secretary Wade Crowfoot expressed alarm recently over the massive and arbitrary layoffs of federal public lands workers. He also said staff cutbacks to national parks and forests could overwhelm the state park system. And Crowfoot warned of a further attack on federal lands.
Earlier this week, the U.S. Senate voted against an amendment to protect against the sale of public lands, meaning it's quite possible in the budget discussions to fund the new administration's agenda on the table could be the sale of these very public lands that we talk about. Also discussed are the removal of certain protections on our most sensitive federal lands and what we call national monuments.
Leaders from a broad spectrum of environmental groups discussed their concerns. Janessa Goldbeck is with the Vet Voice Foundation and a former military construction engineer. She said many veterans enjoy and deserve public lands and do not want to see them sold off for commercial exploitation.
Resoundingly, veterans and military families are saying, do not sell off our public lands. These are not a balance sheet asset. Their value is tremendous, well beyond what they might be worth for oil and gas leasing or other potential commercial uses.
In Palm Desert, Mayor Evan Truby says his city depends on tourism, and federal lands are central to that. 70% of the city's sales tax comes from visitors. Now he's worried about the proposed rollbacks to monument protections and the threat to mining and drilling in nearby Chuckawalla National Monument.
The Chuckawalla National Monument, which is sort of right here in the crosshairs now, has been surveyed, explored for over 170 years now. It is well known that there is nothing of value in that landscape. Its true value lays in its pristine beauty and its resource as a tourism destination.
Adam Kramer is with the Outdoor Alliance that represents a lot of different kinds of outdoor enthusiasts, from hunters to birders. When the massive federal layoffs and closures happened, they sent over 100,000 letters of protest to lawmakers.
Collectively, we've got a membership of about 250,000 people, and they're all passionate about the outdoors. And the premise is that it's part of their identity. There's love and affection for these places, and we try to turn that love and affection into action, into education about what's going on, and opportunities to share their sentiments and perspectives with lawmakers.
As the instability of federal cutbacks and legal reactions continues, the State Resources Agency depends on Deputy Secretary Sarah Amanzadeh as their Washington, D.C. liaison. She reported that it is difficult to get a clear understanding of the government's objectives when information is driven by rumor and palace intrigue. She says the public needs to be involved.
Taking action and talking to your representatives and being a part of this coalition and this movement, the 30 by 30 movement, you know, the Outdoor Alliance, you know, any of these organizations that you're involved with, staying plugged in and activating as directed is super important, because we see that these leaders are making decisions in real time based on what's happening in town halls, based on what's happening in their district offices, based on visits they're receiving in D.C.
Resources leader Wade Crowfoot emphasized how important federal lands are to Americans and that federal leaders have the responsibility to keep them for everybody. Vic Bedoyan reporting for KPFA News and KFCF Radio.
Healthcare advocates and California Congressmember Robert Garcia blast Republican move to slash Medicaid by $88 billion. David Hummel reports.
House Republicans voted last month to slash federal Medicaid by $880 billion in federal spending cuts. Medicaid is the joint state and federal health coverage program for low-income individuals and people with disabilities. Also referred to as Medi-Cal in California, Medicaid pays for the care of 4 in 10 Californians. At a meeting organized by Protect Our Care California, healthcare advocates and Congressman Robert Garcia of Long Beach spoke out against the cuts.
It's really incredibly cruel what Donald Trump and these Republicans are trying to do. They want to take away Medi-Cal from Californians to give tax cuts to Elon Musk and all of their billionaire friends and the largest companies in this country. And what that means for us in California is for the millions and millions of people that rely on Medi-Cal, they are going to either lose coverage, have reduced coverage, or be forced to leave their coverage. They are systematically trying to hurt working Californians, low-income Californians, seniors in our state, so they can give themselves more and more.
Karen Reside is a Long Beach senior and healthcare advocate with the Gray Panthers. She says she's outraged by the proposed cuts, which she says will devastate her community.
I didn't work two jobs most of my life, so Elon Musk can become richer and the billionaires can make more money off my poverty. We have some members on biologics and they're dependent on biologics to live. And people are asking us every month at our meetings, do they just want us to die so they don't have to pay for our health care?
Josephine Rios works in the surgery center at Kaiser Permanente and has been in healthcare for over 20 years. She says that the cuts are life-threatening to her family and her patients. Rios says affording her grandson's life-saving medication is made possible only through Medicaid.
My grandson Elijah is a recipient of receiving Medi-Cal. 7 years old, he has cerebral palsy. You know, Medi-Cal's giving this kid a chance of life. And is that something that they're focused on? This is a child's life. And it's not just Elijah, it's millions of kids that were born like him.
California is the country's leading state recipient of Medicaid, with 13 million enrollees. The congressional districts of Republican Young Kim, Ken Calvert, and David Valadeo have some of the highest numbers of Medicaid recipients in the country. David Valadeo's District 22 has nearly 500,000 medical recipients. Congressman Garcia says that Republican representatives have promised to keep Medicaid, but are secretly voting against their constituents.
If you hear, you know, Young Kim or David Valadeo in an interview, they will say they don't support cuts to Medi-Cal. They'll say it. They've said it to their constituents on TV, not in town halls, because they refuse to host town halls and actually hear from their constituents.
Josephine Rios came face to face with that silence when trying to meet with her representative, Young Kim, about the cuts.
And I'm like, Congressman, you know, Young Kim, can I just have 5 minutes? She took off like a thief in night. She wouldn't even turn around to face me. And, you know, that's just wrong.
Democratic Congressman Garcia and Protect Our Care California demand an end to the Medicaid cuts and for Republican elected representatives to stand up for their constituents. Reporting for KPFA News, I'm David Hummel.
State Senate Committee approves bill to create California Science Research Agency in wake of Trump's cuts to science funding.
California Senate Bill 829, which would create the California Institute for Scientific Research, passed the State Senate Health Committee in an 8-2 vote. Co-authored by Democratic Senators Scott Wiener of San Francisco and Akilah Weber-Pearson of La Mesa, the legislation aims to respond to threats to science funding under the Trump administration, which is slashing federal dollars from a variety of initiatives, including disease prevention studies, vaccine programs, and climate research. Wiener said the bill has two goals.
The bill creates the California Institute for Scientific Research within the Government Operations Agency and authorizes the state to procure and manufacture vaccines through the CalRx program, which currently is limited to prescription drugs, technically doesn't include vaccines.
According to the bill, the proposed California Institute for Scientific Research would offer grants and loans to universities and other organizations and companies, funding scientific research in areas such as climate change, disease prevention, emerging health threats, and biomedical research, among other things. According to the Public Policy Institute of California, the state accounts for 47% of national R&D spending on biotechnology and generates 53% of the nation's biotech revenues. Weiner said California needs to protect both public health and California's economy, which depends heavily on its research sector.
The purpose of this bill is to make sure that California remains a center for scientific research and innovation and advancement, and to elevate California's role in global role in science, and also to ensure that people can still access vaccines in light of the anti-vaccine activist who is now the lead health official in the United States of America.
Critics have raised concerns about the potential cost of creating and running a new state agency, especially as California faces projected budget shortfalls in future years. Democratic Committee Chair Caroline Menchivar said that while she agreed in principle with the goal of the bill, she could not support the proposed course of action.
I agree with what's at stake. I know what's going on the federal level. I 100% agree with you, both of you, on that matter. I won't be... I'll be laying off this bill just because I have a track record of not going up on bills that start a whole new department, and that's just on my principle. So I do agree that we need to do something in this space, but it's just the starting of the new department. I have not asked my committee members to vote either way, and they're free to vote how they wish, but I will be laying off this bill.
Scientists and students packed the Health Committee hearing in support of the bill, many citing lost research funding and uncertainty about future federal support. Senator Weber Pearson said that federal funding cuts have already had a significant impact on California research institutes.
Our current administration's decision to cut $37 million in NIH funding to the University of California and $7 million to the California State University system has significantly disrupted research. This funding reduction has compelled universities to lower student stipends and halt essential studies, especially in the areas such as mental health and conditions such as HIV, COVID-19, and other LGBTQ issues.
Having passed out of the Senate Health Committee, the bill now moves to the State Senate Appropriations Committee for further consideration. I'm Scott Bama, Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
In national news, Congressional Progressive Caucus says Musk must leave in 50 days when his employee status expires under law.
The Congressional Progressive Caucus is putting an expiration date on Trump advisor Elon Musk. Representative Greg Kassar of Texas called attention to Musk's special government employee status, saying that by law, the designation can only last 130 days. He said many Americans may not know that. And then he pointed out that as of Thursday, there are only 50 days left. Musk's last day must be May 30th, which Kassar says cannot come soon enough.
Since the beginning of this administration, Trump and Musk have exploited Musk's designation as a so-called special government employee to allow Musk to receive over $8 million a day in federal government contracts and subsidies while ignoring our conflict of interest rules, and while funneling more and more money to himself and to his companies. But the law is crystal clear.
Representative Melanie Stansbury of New Mexico is also a member of the Delivering on Government Efficiency, or DOGE, subcommittee, named after Musk's Department of Governmental Efficiency. As the ranking Democrat, she says she is proud to be part of the leadership in the fight against Musk. She argues that he has unleashed chaos on the American people by firing tens of thousands and dismantling vital agencies while partially dismantling others. She says since taking office, he has done nothing to help the American people and everything to help himself and fellow billionaires. Stansbury says his time is up and the American people are ready for him to leave.
We are putting you on notice, Elon Musk. You are fired.
The American people are firing you, and you must clear out and get out of this office. Today, myself and Senator Warren are introducing legislation to ensure that this kind of corrupt abuse and grift and scam artists coming into the federal government through a special government employee can never happen again.
Amongst the talk of firing Musk, reporters asked about responses to the Wisconsin court election, in which Musk donated heavily to the Republican candidate who finally ended up losing. Congressman Robert Garcia of California called Republicans cowards, saying he has heard stories about Musk by Republicans who speak in private but refuse to say anything publicly. He said that it is clear that the Republican Party is recognizing Musk is a toxic figure for them, but is scared of his influence. However, both Garcia and Cassar said that this is proof that he cannot buy votes, since the Republicans still lost. Garcia said that post-Wisconsin, he's noticed a shift in attitude towards Musk.
There's no question that since Wisconsin, Elon Musk himself knows that he is becoming a more toxic brand. I mean, the man can't even go and play video games anymore because the people that he's playing with are all harassing him online. And so he is himself feeling more and more isolated. He's posting less on X. He's distancing himself a little bit more from the administration. And I think that he understands that he's the most unlikable person in this country.
In accordance with federal law, Musk must be fired by the administration on May 30th. For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy Quayle.
Federal worker unions fight back against Trump attacks on government workers and their unions, while Dems back pro-worker legislation. Aileen Alfandari reports.
These are dark days for federal workers. A CNN tally found that the Trump administration had fired more than 120,000 federal workers as of the end of March. That number has since grown. President Trump has also taken direct aim at the American Federation of Government Employees, accusing it of obstruction. He terminated collective bargaining for government workers whose jobs include aspects of national security, like airport TSA workers, also workers for the Departments of State, Defense, Veterans Affairs, Energy, Health and Human Services, Treasury, Justice and Commerce, and part of the Homeland Security Department. While federal workers' unions have sued, they're also going on the offensive. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, AFSCME, and other unions are backing legislation that would expand the freedom of public service workers to collectively bargain all over the country. Lee Sanders is AFSCME's president.
We're a union of caregivers, sanitation workers, corrections officers, and school custodians. We plow the roads and we inspect the bridges. We manage parks and we get children safely to and from school every single day. We work on college campuses and hospitals and veterans' homes and so much more. But in about half the nation, state and local employees don't have the same basic freedoms as their private sector counterparts have. They don't have collective bargaining rights.
The measure would give public service workers in every state the right to join a union and collectively bargain over wages, benefits, and working conditions. Hawaii Democrat Mazie Hirono introduced the bill in the Senate. She took a moment to thank the unions who are fighting back against Trump.
I want to thank the unions who are taking on the mantle of fighting back against this totally out of control dictator, as he thinks he's the king.
The measure has little chance of clearing either the House or the Senate, where Republicans hold the majority. Meantime, independent Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders joined with unions and low-wage workers to promote legislation that would raise the federal minimum wage to $17 an hour over a five-year period.
In the year 2025, in the richest country in the history of the world, nobody should be forced to work for starvation wages. It is time to raise the $7.25 an hour federal minimum wage, which is a disgraceful minimum wage, to a living wage.
California's current minimum wage is $16.50 an hour, higher for fast food workers and in many localities, especially in the high-cost Bay Area. but 19 states have a minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. Either through their state laws or by default, they're governed by the federal minimum. They are mostly but not exclusively in the South. Nicole Ray is a passenger services agent at Sky Harbor International Airport in Phoenix. She pushes air passengers in their wheelchairs to and from the gate. She makes more than the federal minimum, but says as a single mom, it's still hard to survive.
Don't get me wrong, I love my job, but I only make $14.70 an hour, the minimum wage in Arizona, and we have to report our tips, which are then taken out of our paychecks. That is not enough to survive and thrive in 2025. I constantly worry about rent, bills, medication, and groceries. I am a single parent of two sons, and I worry each and every day how I'm going to provide for them. The major airlines rake in billions of dollars, but allow us to be paid poverty wages. It's wrong.
Early Saturday morning, Bernie Sanders forced a vote on an amendment to the budget resolution in the Senate that called for raising the federal minimum wage to at least $17 an hour over the next 5 years. Every Democrat voted for it. Every Republican but one opposed it. I'm Eileen Alfandari for KPFA News.
Trump and Salvadoran President Bukele say they won't release man wrongly deported to notorious Salvadoran prison. Christopher Martinez reports.
It looks like the man wrongfully deported to El Salvador and thrown in a notorious terrorist prison will not be getting any help from the Trump administration, despite court orders to facilitate his return. President Donald Trump met with the president of El Salvador at the White House Monday, where reporters asked whether the administration would work to bring Kilmar Abrego Garcia back to the U.S. Trump referred the question to other administration officials. Attorney General Pam Bondi said that's up to the president of El Salvador. White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller left no doubt about the administration's position.
No version of this legally ends up with him ever living here because he is a citizen of El Salvador. That is the president of El Salvador. Your questions about it per the court can only be directed to him.
Salvadoran President Nayib Bukele likewise closed the door on releasing Abrego Garcia.
How can I return him to the United States? Like, I smuggle him into the United States, or what do I do? Of course, I'm not going to do it. It's like, the question is preposterous. How can I smuggle a terrorist into the United States? I don't have the power to return him to the United States.
Bukele, who describes himself on Twitter as world's coolest dictator, is the first Latin American leader to visit the White House since Trump took office. He's accepted hundreds of deported Venezuelans and Salvadorans deported from the U.S. as gang members, sending them to a notorious maximum security prison outside the nation's capital. That prison, called Center for Terrorism Confinement, with the Spanish acronym CICOT, was announced to hold 20,000 detainees, but that has been doubled to 40,000. Inmates there are denied communication with relatives and lawyers, and Human Rights Watch says it is not aware of any detainee there ever being released. But the prison, and Bukele's willingness to open it for detainees, make Bukele a key ally for Trump. Bukele told Trump, "We're a small country, but if we can help, we can do it."
In fact, Mr. President, you have 350 million people to liberate. But to liberate 350 million people, you have to imprison some. That's the way it works, right? You cannot just free the criminals and think crime's going to go down magically. You have to imprison them so you can liberate 350 million Americans that are asking for the end of crime and the end of terrorism. And it can be done. You're doing it already.
Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, who had held a photo op at the Salvadoran prison, welcomed Bukele's help.
Mr. President Bukele, we thank you very much for your partnership. It has been wonderful for us to be able to have somewhere to send the worst of the worst and someone to partner with, and we'd like to continue that partnership.
President Trump also would like to continue that partnership and even to expand on it by deporting even more people, potentially including citizens, if they're violent criminals.
Yeah, that includes them. What, do you think there's a special category of person? They're as bad as anybody that comes in. We have bad ones, too. And I'm all for it. Because we can do things with the president for less money and have great security.
The U.S. is paying El Salvador about $6 million to hold the U.S. deportees for 1 year. Details of that agreement have not been publicly released. Expanding deportations to include U.S. citizens would, of course, be a hugely controversial step, but that has not stopped Trump before. Over the weekend, the Trump administration deported another 10 people to the Salvadoran prison. Meanwhile, the American Civil Liberties Union has filed three new lawsuits challenging the administration's use of the Alien Enemies Act to deport migrants. That's the same law that was used to imprison Japanese Americans during the Second World War. A group of Democratic lawmakers issued a joint statement blasting the deportations, saying that invoking the Alien Enemies Act, in their words, endangers all of us by removing due process protections and ignoring the plain text of the statute. Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Turning to Gaza, displaced Rafah residents fear they won't ever be allowed to return. Some think displacements are part of a plan to depopulate Gaza. Rami Amuleri reports.
In the coastal area of western Khan Yunis, southern Gaza Strip, thousands of Palestinian families from Rafah have once again set up makeshift tents displaced by yet another major Israeli military operation. Shireen Derby, a mother of five, says her family returned to their home in the Al-Zuhur neighborhood of Rafah after a ceasefire was announced on January 19. But when Israeli forces resumed operations on March 23, they were forced to flee once again.
When we returned from Azdah in Khan Yunis to Rafah, I was shocked. Entire neighborhoods like Saudi 1, Saudi 2, and Al Barama were destroyed. As the truck carrying us turned, it felt like doomsday. No stone, tree, or person left untouched. Only God has mercy on us now. Only God stands with us. We stayed in our home. My brother-in-law took a room there too, and being together gave us comfort.
Shireen's frustration is shared by countless Rafah residents now displaced in western Khan Yunis. Wael Musa, a father of four, from the Tal Sultan neighborhood in western Rafah, says his area was among the first to be invaded.
We have entered a very difficult stage, as your home is your homeland. Where do you take care of your kids and where do you go following such a massive destruction? Only God could be of help and we could rely on him only.
Many Rafah residents now fear they may never return. The Israeli army has taken full control of Rafah, including the Philadelphia corridor along the Egyptian border and the Murag corridor connecting Rafah to Khan Yunis. Israel says its operations aim to dismantle Hamas, but some analysts believe the goals go further. Veteran political analyst Faiz Abu Shamala says the demographic imbalance speaks volumes.
The size of the Israeli settlement community of Gosh Ashkel near Gaza is size 700 square kilometers and populated by 12,000 settlers. This imbalanced structure, compared with the size of Gaza, which is half the size of Ashkel, is populated by 2.5 million Palestinians, is in itself historical injustice. Therefore, Israel seeks controlling the land and transferring the population of this land.
Abu Shamala and others here believe that takeover of Rafah is part of a broader plan to depopulate Gaza. The city is considered Gaza's agricultural heartland, making up nearly one-fifth of its total land. Mohammed Abu Jayab is a leading economic expert in Gaza.
Surely, the control over Rafah has affected the availability of various crops in Gaza and led to higher prices. I believe that this would deepen the humanitarian crisis. The more Israel expands its operations over the area, the more abandoned lands will be, and people will increasingly bear the brunt of food insecurity.
During a recent meeting in Washington, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and U.S. President Donald Trump discussed Gaza. Trump voiced support for allowing Gazans to leave, claiming Gaza is no longer a livable place. For Pacifica Radio, KPFA, I am Rami El-Mighari, in Gaza.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and to all of our reporters.
KMUD News is online. You can find us at kmud.org and now streaming on most major podcast platforms. If you have questions or story ideas, give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from Hoopa High School, for KIDE and KMUD, I'm Maya Trimble.
Carmen Hostler.
I'm Levi Miner.
I'm Julian Serber.
I'm Willa Moon.
Alina Daniel.
We are the Hoopa High School Youth News Team.
Thank you for listening to tonight's newscast, which is supported in part by the Humboldt Journalism Project, a Dreammaker project of the Ink People.